Recreational hunting raises ethical and moral concerns, but paradoxically, it's often suggested as a way to conserve nature and support local people's livelihoods. In a new article published in the journal One Earth, Finnish scientists have worked with South Australian researchers to review more than 1,000 studies on recreational hunting in an attempt to examine effects on society and biodiversity. Ecology Professor Corey Bradshaw from Flinders Uni joins me now. Hi, Professor Bradshaw.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, really well, thank you. Now, some people have actually been socially cancelled for sharing photos of their hunted animal proudly on social media, particularly if it's a rare or endangered creature. A lot of people get really upset. It certainly seems like a contradiction that killing animals would then support their future prospects. Tell us what's going on here.
Yeah, well, like anything, it's complicated and it's often very context specific. So clearly, if you're going out and shooting animals in a population, if you're shooting them at a high enough frequency or rate, you're going to drop the population size. Now, for a threatened species, that's not a good thing, obviously, and there are a lot of other global threats out there, climate change being one of them. So it has to be managed very carefully. Now, where things can be positive is, I'll give a few examples. For example, in places like Namibia, and certain parts of South Africa, where trophy hunting occurs, overseas hunters pay exorbitant amounts of money in often countries that aren't as economically prosperous as others. So if that money can be channeled towards conservation programs, that includes everything from fencing or feral animal eradication or the upkeep of anti-poaching staff, all sorts of things, then that money can be used for a lot of good. With the death of an individual, you can potentially hire all sorts of rangers and fix up parks and safari areas that will benefit thousands of other species. Now, that's if the money is used wisely. Mm. If the money goes to basically just the owners of the operation and it doesn't filter back into the community or into conservation works, then it's kind of lost. So in that case, it would be a net negative. So it's a little Machiavellian in the sense that if the ends, if the means justify the end, then you can have some positive benefits. Another positive benefit, and this is really sort of more of a North American model, where I'll give you an example again. The largely hunting group Ducks Unlimited has been in operation for many, many decades, and their principal goal is to upkeep and protect and restore wetlands for ducks, mainly waterfowl, that are often hunted by recreational hunters. Now, that single organization has been responsible for restoring more wetland area and therefore benefiting not only countless other species, but also, you know, water filtration services and the various other things that wetlands do for us for free than almost any other organization on the planet. So that financing and that interest in the hunting has actually protected more habitat than any government-related program that is dedicated to wetland restoration. So it's really about protecting habitats that are used by hunters. And this occurs in Africa as well. You can get, there's in fact more area protected for trophy hunting than there is by national parks. Now, if you're fundamentally opposed to the killing of an individual ethically and morally, and that doesn't justify the means. So there's a value judgment here as well. Now, personally, I find it quite abhorrent, and I couldn't participate. But if you try to be empirical about it and look at the bigger picture, it can have positive benefits.
Professor of Ecology Corey Bradshaw is with me. What about here in Australia? Do we have much of a recreational hunting collective? And what have you found about the ethical and moral concerns in relation to how we do it here?
Yeah, well, Australia is kind of a weird one in the global sense, in that most of the recreational hunting is done on feral animals, invasive species that have either been brought here deliberately or accidentally. So most, you know, there are a lot of deer hunters in southern Australia, for example. I know in my own little patch here in the Adelaide Hills where I live, you know, we've seen more and more deer every year, and you know, PERS is getting quite upset about that. But, you know, it's a two-edged sword again because, you know, we want to eradicate them and we want to shoot these animals from a control perspective. But there's the moral implications, but also the fact that if there's a demand for hunting, you can actually have a system that promotes the population of the targeted species. So it's kind of like what we call this maximum sustainable yield scenario, which is a term we borrowed from fisheries. The idea that you go and shoot only a certain small proportion of the population, and the population responds by producing more individuals. That's an idea of density feedback. So you can actually have a worse ecological outcome even if you're killing individuals. So you have to hit them really hard to get rid of them, which is expensive, and it takes, you know, basically recreational hunting tends not to do much. There are other examples where it can, for example, feral goats in much in more arid country, and feral pigs, especially up north. So, you know, pig hunting is a big thing in Queensland and the Northern Territory. In most cases, it probably, though, doesn't do a lot for actually reducing the ecological damage that they cause.
Oh, right. And what about for things like kangaroos?
Yeah, well, there is a little bit of recreational hunting kangaroos, but most of the kangaroo harvest is commercial in Australia. So we didn't really cover that in the paper, but yeah, that's a very highly controlled government program in most states.
That's true. Mm. So where to next with your research?
I think one of the big things that we really don't have enough information on is that idea of how you design a program that gets around with some of the corruption issues and gets that investment back into the community. So it's not just for the benefit of other species, but also the livelihoods of local people, because if local people feel ostracized from the very resources that they are around, for example, you know, let's say up in an impoverished community in some parts of southern Africa, if they feel disconnected from the profits associated with the species they live with, and it's part of their culture, they don't value those species, and so they're less likely to support conservation initiatives. So if some of that trophy money, for example, goes into the local community and creates jobs and increases the standard of living for people and employment opportunities, they're much more likely to buy in. And we don't really know how many of these programs are effective at doing that and what the main impediments to that flow of money are.
Great. Well, it sounds like there's a lot of work to be done. Thank you so much for your time today. Really lovely to have a chat with you.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.